Welcome to Skills of the Future, a podcast by Perennial Talent. In this mini-series, we explore how to apply skills and competencies to the world of work.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast, Skills of the Future, and our mini-series on HR Game Changers, applying skills and competencies to the world of work. In this episode, we'll be talking about all things unconscious bias. My name is Andrea Butler, and I'm your host and principal consultant at Perennial Talent. My guest today is Brandy Moncrief. She is a global DEI leader with extensive experience and a proven ability to execute enterprise initiatives, drive change, and tangible bottom line value. Brandy is a strategic business partner with a laser focus on creating more inclusive and equitable workplaces. She's driven by her passion to positively impact the experience of people through intentional inclusion. As a senior certified HR professional, Brandy excels in holding leaders and organizations accountable for effective and lasting change. She has nearly 15 years of experience helping organizations drive innovative HR solutions and supporting strategies that transform the business and its people. Welcome to the show, Brandy.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited for the opportunity to talk unconscious bias.
Let's start off, though, with our fun icebreaker question. What's something you've read or watched lately that you would recommend to others?
I think I'm gonna give you something for watched and read. What I'm currently watching, Yellowstone, drama. It is full of, hot countrymen and all of the drama that comes with that. And what I'm reading or what I've read lately is rereading The Alchemist for probably the 45th time at this point. But I always learn something new from a reading of that. And it also just helps to check me and hold myself accountable for going after what I really want and knowing that it's there. That's what I'm doing.
Absolutely. And have you seen the prequel to Yellowstone?
I have not. I believe that's 1883.
Yes. Also
on my
good
list.
Also good. And I think they're making a prequel to the prequel because, you know, why not?
Why not? Keep it going until Exactly. Everybody gets tired of it.
Pretty much, yeah. All right, so let's move on then to our questions focused on all things unconscious bias. So I'm curious, from your perspective, how has an organization's strategy towards managing unconscious bias changed or evolved?
Oh, great question. I think I'm going to answer that in three parts. I think awareness, accountability, and action is what's changing. Oftentimes we talk about being self-aware. We don't talk enough about organizational awareness. And I think that that's happening now, and not just, you know, in the last year or two. Over the last 5 to 10 years, it's been happening where organizations are becoming more aware of what's happening at a people level, and that's outside of the big decision-making rooms, on an individual level. And then they're also becoming more aware about what their customers, their employees, their suppliers, society, and communities care about. And in that aspect, it's causing them to be held accountable to their own standards, and to also giving them opportunity to hold others accountable. And our communities are also holding us accountable as organizations to be responsible citizens of inclusivity and being more aware of the biases that impact decision-making. And last but not least, action. So it's not enough to be aware. It's not enough to hold people accountable unless you're going to actually act on that. And organizations are being forced to act. And I mean, you can attribute it to the conversations that are happening in society today. You can attribute that to even cancel culture that's happening, where people are afraid of the cancellation of products, services, businesses, people. And so they're being forced to act. And I think that is causing strategies to evolve in a positive way, in a forward direction for forward progress. And also, employees are realizing that in the past, we were working for companies. Companies are starting to work for employees. And that's making a huge impact on where we go strategy-wise with unconscious bias.
Exactly. And what are some of the challenges then that you've seen when it comes to helping employees reduce unconscious bias, especially during key things like the interview?
Great question. And I laugh because I recently was doing some unconscious bias learning training, and asked as a joke question, I asked somebody to raise their hand if they didn't have bias. And lo and behold, two people raised their hand and said, I'm not biased at all. And I said to myself, well, they lack self-awareness. And I think that that is one of the challenges, one of the many challenges that we're facing in the interview process. And that is where you have the panel of people interviewing these candidates and slates who aren't even aware of their own biases. I mean, hence unconscious bias, but they go into conversations and interviews and big decision-making rooms and think that they're entering with zero bias. So they think that the decisions that they're making or the candidates that they're selecting are fair. And they never stop to say, oh, I assessed that candidate based on how similar they were to me. Or I was assessing that candidate because they were a good culture fit. Don't get me started on culture fit, but I'll get started on culture fit. You know, I hear that all the time, right? That person just wasn't a good culture fit. To me, it's an unacceptable answer if you're not able to expand on that thought. If you say, you know, just can't put my finger on it, I can't really figure out why their person is not a good culture fit, I'm not gonna, you know, consider that in the decision-making process. However, if you can give me concrete reasons to culture why somebody is not a fit, then we can get past that challenge. And maybe we can even bring somebody else into the conversation to say, hey, can you get some eyes on this? Which we don't do that enough. We're not willing to challenge our own thoughts, our own biases, or our own lack of understanding to check ourselves or to check even someone else. And oftentimes we make poor decisions because of that.
Absolutely.
I hope I answered that question.
Yeah, I was going to say, I always find it interesting how people are like, yeah, we've got to eliminate unconscious bias. And it's like, but you can't actually
eliminate it. You can conquer it.
That's right.
You can disrupt it. You can mitigate it, but you cannot cancel it.
Exactly. So then in terms of skills or competencies, are there any that you feel are particularly important right now for an organization if they want to reduce unconscious bias?
Sure. And I think I touched on two of them already, organizational and self-awareness. While they could be considered competencies, I like to consider those real skills to be able to take a look at yourself, take a look at your business, and be aware of what's happening or what's stifling progress. Also, when you think of, you know, who's in the room, who's at the table, who has a voice, who's in the seat, are those people inclusive leaders? Even if you're not leading a full team, are you inclusive? Meaning, are you curious? Are you collaborative? Are you asking the right questions to people? Are you inviting the right people into the conversations? Are you challenging your own thoughts, actions, and decisions that you're making? And, you know, when I think through the many traits of inclusive leadership, curiosity is the one that really sticks out to me because it requires you to ask questions, not of others, but also of yourself. And so inclusive leadership, if you can be, I mean, obviously you can't reduce that to six traits of inclusive leadership, but if you can embody the main traits of inclusive leadership from a competency or skill perspective, I think you're going to make some real headway in the progress in moving the dial to reduce bias and to create more inclusive workplaces and just rooms in general.
Absolutely. And what do you think are the future threats or pain points if organizations really don't take the time to reduce unconscious bias, especially during, say, the interview?
One of the biggest future threats is the quality of talent. You know, as I mentioned before, employees or candidates are starting to realize that organizations are now working for us. And if we're not willing to do what it takes to reduce bias, be more inclusive, not just as leaders, but as organizations, internally and externally, we're going to risk losing some of the best talent that's out there. And while, of course, there's a great resignation happening, people have options, which is why they have a great resignation. Whether you have another stream of income, you're raising a family, you're an entrepreneur now, you got a side hustle somewhere, people don't have to stay anymore where they're not welcomed, where they're not cared for. And I think that that's going to be a huge threat if we can't get it right, that we're going to lack the right talent that helps us to be organizations of the future. And while some organizations may be okay being the organization of yesterday or just today, you have to start thinking futuristically. What does my organization need to look like in the future to meet the demands and the needs, not just of my customers, but of the community? When you think of, you know, many things impacting our environments today, it's going to take futuristic looking companies to be able to accomplish what we need to do to move us forward environmentally. When you think ESG, when you think people and talent, when you think numbers, I mean, we all have to make money as an organization, right? As organizations or leaders. So you have to be able to put dollars to that. And that's not to monetize the opportunities, but it's really to be intentional about our perspective and really get out of the box on our thought processes and our actions.
And so then what can organizations do if they want to be more intentional and really work towards minimizing those threats that you just talked about and ultimately reducing bias?
Well, how much time do you have? I have a long list of what companies can do, but I'll try to be concise here. And I think one of the first things that we have to do is stop thinking train, train, train. Training is important. Training does help to be impactful and help to make people more aware, help them understand. But oftentimes we do training right on our small 14-inch screens, right? Or it's a module that we're doing. So how many people are really internalizing the information? How many people are really walking away with something? The learning model, 70-20-10 of what we learn and how we learn it and what we actually retain goes beyond training. It's real life experiences and real life conversations. And being able to have small conversations or candid conversations where your employees or your stakeholders understand that there won't be repercussions if I ask questions that a lot of people are thinking and wanting to know the answer to, but everybody's afraid to ask because I'm not sure if there's going to be retaliation. So I think first you have to go beyond training. You have to be open to having conversations that allow people to be transparent, candid, vulnerable without repercussions. And that's leadership level all the way down to individual contributors. Another important step, I believe, is going to be that organizations have to be willing to cut ties to people, customers, suppliers who simply refuse to adapt. And a lot of times that looks like dollars flying out the door, or that we're going to miss our goals, our marks, you know, when we think of profit. But we have to be willing to take the temporary hit for permanent long-term gain. If we can't do that, we're not going to make it. We're not going to be able to mitigate the threats. We're not going to be able to reduce bias. You know, a great leader, I won't mention names to protect the guilty. A great leader once said, you know, our company values get you in the door. Upholding and embodying those values keep you here. They help you to be developed. They help you to be promoted. They help you to be in the next leader seat. We have to be willing to cut ties with the people who don't uphold the values, who refuse to adapt. And I think that's where a lot of companies are falling short. You know, we're tied to dollars, or we're tied to big customers, or we're tied to big communities. And we're afraid to say, you know what, you don't uphold our values. You don't align with the mission that we believe. And we need to just end the relationship. They see money flying out the door and they say, nope, we can't take that hit. You got to be willing to take the hit. Again, it's temporary for long-term gain for the futuristic organizations of tomorrow.
Well, otherwise you do have money going out the door in terms of your talent.
That's right. Yeah. And it's hard to get that back because you have one reputation today. And once that reputation, we know this as practitioners, once your reputation is tarnished and it gets so bad, it's hard to climb back out of that. And I mean, you can hire the consultants, right? You can hire the PR teams to get you out of it, but that's also dollars. That's also dollars and cents. And so we have to be willing to, you know, clean up our reputation, clean up our processes, practices internally and externally. Or else, you know, like you said, that's talent flying out the door. That's customers that we're not going to be able to attain or retain. Those are markets that we will no longer be able to reach into, or new markets that we won't be invited into. We just have to be willing to do that.
And so do you have any advice for maybe HR professionals who are looking to reduce unconscious bias in their own organizations?
Absolutely. Run to the top and tell them that you need the resources to get it done. But, you know, I like to look at it as a full arch when you think of, you know, becoming a more inclusive workplace that seeks to reduce bias. And that arch is assessing to become aware on one end. When you think of the far left side of the arch, you know, think of a rainbow. On the far left side is awareness. And then you have little markers along the way, along that arch, that align with, you know, once you become aware, let me help you to really understand what that means. And once you've gained the understanding and awareness, let me get you to believe that it actually matters. I get you to believe, let me get you to adopt the actions, the competencies, the skills, the behaviors that are going to help you to actually implement and enact. So you got awareness on the far left side, to understanding, to believing, to actually adopting. And once you started to adopt it, it becomes a part of what you do. And it becomes a part of really who you are as a leader. And that gets you to the acting piece of it, where, you know, it's a little uncomfortable at first. And we got to get comfortable being uncomfortable. We've heard it all. It's becoming cliche at this point. But it is a little uncomfortable at first because it's not a normal part of what we do until we start to really believe it and adopt it. And then we start to act on that. It becomes a part of who we are. And we know that as leaders, we set the tone for the rest of our teams, what they see or how they perceive a leader to be. And that means in trust and empathy and care and experience. You act and then other people start to catch on and it becomes a domino effect and people start to get on the wagon. I won't call it a bandwagon, it's a wagon. People start to get on the train and people start to pick up what you're putting down. And that's where our larger organization, our leaders, our individual contributors all come together through these small conversations, the candid conversations that I mentioned before. They all start to come together and we all start to move that wagon forward as a team. And that really is going to, I think, help us to reduce bias, help us to be better leaders, help us to be futuristic organizations, help us to mitigate bias. And really, my hope is that if we can implement that full arch across many of our practices and processes, these conversations start being less necessary because it becomes a part of our fabric. It's a part of our core fabric, our DNA, if you will. And it becomes a normal part of who we are as organizations. And it becomes the standard for what organized great organizations look like.
Well said. That was actually the last question that I had for you today. Is there anything else that you wanted to add?
Yeah, let me just add this last point. You know, we have to assess our organizations. It's not good enough to just jump in and start saying, hey, you need to change. We have to assess. I mentioned that full rainbow. We have to assess ourselves, our teams, our organizations to see where we are at any given point in time along that arch. But not just that, it is no one person's job to move the dial. It is everyone's job. It takes all of us to implement, enact effective and impactful change. And so I think as leaders, as practitioners, as organizations, we have to be willing to hold every single person accountable, including ourselves. Because if people continue thinking that, oh, it's the HR team's job, it's the DEI practitioner's job, it's the CEO and senior leadership team's job, well, they're standing by doing nothing while everybody else is working really hard to make progress and to implement change. So everybody has to be on board. Everybody has to understand their role, understanding that that looks different depending on what level you're in, but everybody has a role to play. But it also starts with one person. My job, it starts with me to tell someone else, to help someone else. And then that person goes and again, it becomes the domino effect. So it takes all of us. And I think we have to own that, that while you have a DEI team, an HR team, it needs to go beyond that in order to make real lasting progress. That's it.
Goes back to the accountability.
Exactly.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, Brandy, for coming on the show today. And listeners, if you would like to talk to Brandy about unconscious bias or anything else that she's talked about today, the best place to reach out would be on LinkedIn. So thanks again, Brandy.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to continuing the conversation.
And thanks to everyone for listening.